And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. I am your host, Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me today is...
Scotty Hertz. Just slid in for my vacation and preparing for the heat wave as best I can.
Oh,
lots of water in the fridge.
Don't talk about the heat wave.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't. It's
going to go
on. It's coming, folks. Be ready. Be prepared.
I can even feel it in here right now. Great.
Sorry.
Good intro.
To start on a sad note, it's going to suck till Wednesday. Yeah.
Open Source is a CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. And you can listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean or through iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Now, today we're going to talk about this year's Toronto Pride festivities, the first in the shadow of the investigation into Bruce MacArthur. Also, the new premier wasn't there. So this is the beginning of a new politicization of Pride. That was tough to say. And then, speaking of Toronto, we'll talk about the prospect of another summer of the gun and the recent increase in gun violence there. Is the city taking the right steps to keep the peace on the streets? But first, this was... a really hard interview to get. This was a super... I mean, everybody wants a piece of this guy now.
You want a piece of me?
I mean, it used to be we could get Mike Schreiner to come on for like an hour. Like on a Thursday. No problem. But now...
a six-hour epic mini-series.
Yeah, I mean, now it's just like... yeah, maybe he can do Thursday, but maybe he has to come in Wednesday night so we can pre-record. Because, you know, he's got to go and present awards to the... Chamber of Commerce annual awards gala, whatever.
The duties of an MPP are never ever fulfilled, are they?
Ridiculous. Anyway, we did pre-record the following interview with the incoming MPP for Guelph, Mike Schreiner, and I think it speaks for itself. Shall we just play it?
I think we should.
Okay, let's play it. So we are pleased to be joined by, and we can now say, well, it's not official because you haven't been sworn in yet, but you're the member of provincial parliament designate, Mike Schreiner, history maker Mike Schreiner. It's so weird to have a history maker on our show. It's quite unprecedented.
Yeah, it sounds as if he's a new guest either. So
no, it's weird. It's must have felt great. I mean, it must have like been such a vindication. You know, for it wasn't just 6 weeks of work. It was 6 years of work that, you know, it wasn't just, you know, the individual effort, but there was a real community that rallied around you. And you had such a dedicated team. So that, I mean, I can't imagine what that must have felt like.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's great to be back on. And second, it did feel good. It felt really good. But I think it was more, I was excited for Guelph. And one of the indications of that for me was this past Sunday, I marched in the Toronto Pride Parade. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's millions of people there, right? And so you're marching along. And I can't tell you how many people in the crowd were screaming, Guelph, way to go, Guelph. It wasn't like Schreiner. It was like, Guelph, you rock, Guelph rules. So that
we're
was pretty
on the
cool.
map now, right?
There's the Guelph guy.
There's the Guelph guy.
Get him. No.
Give it a few years.
Yeah.
I think we saw the polls that said it was you were in the lead. It was but it was a tight race. But the final result, I mean, it wasn't even close. You know, that's as much a blowout as I think I've ever seen following Guelph politics. So, you know, so what were your people talking about? I mean, did it look that clear cut from the inside? Were you like stretching and striding away into Election Day?
Well, we'll put it this way. I did have kind of a sketch of two speeches ready to go.
Yeah.
one a victory, one a concession. So we knew it wasn't a slam dunk. But, you know, I kept telling everyone publicly we're cautiously optimistic. And I was cautiously optimistic. I knew our numbers were better than just from our internal polling than what some people were suggesting. But I didn't want to release that because, sure. You know, there's always the questions of like, is it partisan? Did you somehow, you know, design the poll in a way that, you know, makes you look better than you would? And so
right.
I just thought, you know what, there were a couple independent polls out there suggesting we were in the lead in a tight race. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of undecided voters just decided they could vote green this time. And I can tell you after the 2014 election, a lot of people came up to me after the election and said, "Oh, I wanted to vote for you. I believe in you, Mike. I like the Green Party's vision, your values, your platform, but I just don't think you can win." Mm. And I think this time people are like, "You know what? He can win, and now I can vote for what I want, and I'm not going to cave in to this message of fear where you have to vote strategically against someone." And the night I had an indication that we were really, really doing well was the Tuesday before Election Day. So 2 days before Election Day, I remember coming back to the office, and it was 10 o'clock at night, and I was pretty tired. And I walked into the room, and there's like 60 people in the office at 10 o'clock at night, all working away. And somebody turned music on and people were dancing. And it was just like, I'm like, "Whoa, people, stop. We still have 2 days to go. We shouldn't be celebrating yet." But they weren't celebrating. But what it was just such an energetic feeling of community. And I really wanted the campaign to be about building a community. And I feel like that's what we really did with the campaign. Mm. And so it was inspiring for me to see so many people energized and excited about politics, being involved in politics, and so many people feeling good about their vote.
Let me ask you about Lordy, I lost my place. We're just having such a great time. But
you were just thinking about that dancing in the office. I should have been there.
I wish I was there. But where do you credit then the difference this time around? Because I think there were a lot of different things happening, both at the provincial level and at the local level. Liz Sandals wasn't here, and you know, fortune tends to favor the incumbent in you know, many times, maybe not in this election, in many of the old liberal ridings. But you know, how did this get, you know, again, it was a blowout. How did this get turned around so effectively?
Well, I think, first of all, I've worked really hard for a long time. I think a lot of people see me as somebody who has been a champion for Guelph, an engaged activist person in the community, working hard on a number of issues that people in Guelph care about, as well as just being on, you know, boards and committees and supporting organizations in Guelph. Mm-hmm. And so I think some of that was just this person has worked really hard for Guelph. He clearly cares about this community. Mm. Be a strong champion for Guelph. So that was sort of the part we could control.
Right.
And then the other part we could control is just, I think we had an amazing campaign team. You know, everything, you know, from you know, my campaign manager, Sean Yeo, all the way through to everybody on the campaign, I thought did a fantastic job. And then the third element is just the things we can't control.
Yeah.
And so I think this was an election about change. And so I think voters had decided that they were not going to vote the Liberals back in.
Yeah.
But at least in Guelph, I know this may not be the case in the rest of the province, I had a lot of people, especially conservatives, tell me that, you know, they just couldn't vote for a Doug Ford-led conservative party. And if you look at the leadership vote in Guelph, I mean, Christine Elliott won
by a
pretty wide margin here in Guelph. So I think those sort of, and so then voters were deciding whether, you know, that change vote was going to go green or go NDP. Obviously, they chose green this particular time. And I think one of the messages we delivered that really resonated with people was just the idea of doing politics differently. Mm-hmm. And we didn't just say that. I think we demonstrated it in our actions. We ran a very positive, clean campaign. I talked a lot about, you know, working across party lines, moving away from the toxic political culture that we see at Queen's Park. And I mean, we kind of see all over North America, especially south of the border. And I think people here in Guelph, at least, really responded to that positive message that we can do politics in a way that, you know, is honest, that is, you know, not adversarial. You know, I wasn't one of these people who says, "You're always wrong and I'm always right."
Right.
And I think people in Guelph appreciated that.
So there's going to be no tweets about sleepy-eyed Robert Benson or something like that.
Mike, I think part of your engagement too, and it's maybe a bit unusual for somebody who doesn't have a seat or anything yet, is that you spent a lot of time at Queen's Park before you were elected.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw the postings that you had your orientation. What did it finally feel like to walk out on the floor and be like, "It's been all these years and now I have a seat"? Did you get your actual seat?
So
you're going to sit here, Schreiner, over in
So I learned my seat today, as a matter of fact. Yeah, yeah. Cool. So I met with the clerk today and learned my actual seat placement. But I guessed pretty good at the orientation. I was sitting very close to the seat I will have.
Nice.
So I kind of sort of knew where I thought I would be. But I think it was walking in on the floor of Queen's Park where it really hit me that, wow, this is real. This has really happened. Because up until that point, I could feel it, but I hadn't really felt it. And so to be on the floor at Queen's Park and to look up in the gallery where I've sat for many years and observed Queen's Park, just the fact that I could stroll into Queen's Park.
No
and
one
not
from the OPP
have security
saying, yeah, like,
whoa,
wait, where are you going, buddy?
Are you the one from Guelph? Yeah.
Are you the one that's on the security list here that we got to watch out for? So you have the security guard smile at me. And a couple of them said to me, it's like, oh, it's so nice that you can actually walk in here. And we don't have to like watch your every move
required,
kind of thing.
I was just going to say, we joke about that, but you are heading into a realm where you are going to get considerably more attention, and not just from the Guelph media like us. And I think we've seen that, that a lot of people are going, oh, the Green Party leader is in the House. He's an MPP. It's kind of hard to ignore him now. Not that necessarily people were purposefully ignoring you, but have you been noticing that there are more eyes on you now?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've done so many interviews in the last 2 weeks since the election. And I mean, some of that's being driven by Premier Designate Ford seems to be going after anything to do with the environment right now. So I've got a go-to guy on that.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of media interviews and I received a lot of attention. And I think that's going to be good for Guelph. Even if I'm doing it as an opposition member, I think what I've had I've even had businesses already starting to reach out to me and saying, hey, we've thought about investing in Guelph and. We're in the clean economy, and partly it's because obviously Guelph embraces this. And so I'm hoping that, we can leverage that, that attention to to bring a variety of benefits to Guelph. And I've already reached out to Ted Arnott, who, as you know, is the conservative member for Wellington Halton Hills, just to talk about how the two of us can work together because, there's so much funding for this area that, that goes to the county and the city, and the two work together quite closely. And so just making sure that even though we're members of different parties, that the two of us are working closely together for the benefit of Guelph and Wellington County. And so, so it's been quite a ride. And I can also tell you a lot of people in the community have already reached out to me because, an important role that an MPP plays is just helping people in the community, navigate the government bureaucracy, deal with, roadblocks people are experiencing or helping people who need access to services. And so we're still getting our office up and running, but that's an important role. And we've already had a lot of people in the community reach out.
Be interesting if you and Ted became Go Train buddies, eh? Is that your plan? I guess everybody gets there a different way, but that is one heck of a commute. So
So as much as possible, I have commuted by Go in the past. I hope to continue to commute by Go as much as possible. There are certain times and things where that's not possible.
Yeah.
But as much as possible, I'd love to do that. And I'm certainly I did let Ted know that. I'm going to keep pushing this government to so we have all-day two-way Go service, which would certainly make the trips back and forth easier.
Probably wouldn't be such a bad idea considering that the Go train passes through Georgetown, too, and that's the end of the line, too. And so that puts a lot of pressure on that station.
Absolutely.
Have you set a location for your constituency office yet, or is that still in the works?
Yeah, so how this works is the lease is actually held by the legislature.
Oh, yeah.
So I have what was Liz Sandals' office at 173 Woolwich Street.
Oh, yeah.
Till the end of September. I'm likely going to continue operating out of that space. For a variety of reasons. One, it's been the MPP office for a long time now.
Right.
So people know that space. They know where to go. It's a 5-minute walk from my house, which is really nice, I'll have to admit. The office is fully accessible from a disability standpoint, which is really important to me. And it's also located close to a lot of the services that people need to access, whether it's Ontario Works, Ontario Disability Support, family services,
community health center. Yeah.
So a lot of those important community agencies where people access services are close to the office. And I think that's important in terms of just providing a level of service to constituents.
Okay, well, that's it. Because it is a, like an element of curiosity to me that I have not like explored. But the space on Cork Street that's currently Lloyd Longfield's mm-hmm. office was Frank Valeriot's office.
That's right.
It was Brenda Chamberlain's office. So that, I mean, if it's kind of all run by at the government end, that makes sense. So
yeah, and all the furniture in there is owned by the legislature as well. So oh, yeah. I mean, it's
turnkey
sort of,
operation.
It's a bit of a turnkey operation, yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Cool. We did bring up the premier designate. That swearing-in happens on Friday, and I know when we talked on election night, you were looking forward to having a sit-down with him to talk about priorities and things. Has that sit-down happened yet, or has there been any conversation at all?
So that sit-down has not happened. I've certainly sent a letter out to the premier-designate, but, you know, in all fairness to Mr. Ford, I mean, I'm sure he's been pretty busy trying to put together a cabinet and mm-hmm. and just get the wheels of government turning. So I'm hoping that the opportunity for that conversation will happen. But I have had conversations with other members of the Conservative caucus and you know, particularly people who have been there for a while. And obviously, Ted Arnett and I have, you know, we've met face-to-face personally and have attended a couple of events together. And so I'm hoping at some point soon I'll have the opportunity to have a sit down with the premier, or well, premier designate for the next day.
48 hours, yeah. Because one of the things that strikes me is, I mean, you seem fairly optimistic, but since the election, and we just mentioned this a couple of minutes ago, but there has been sort of the concerted effort of dismantling the green, let's call it the green legacy of the previous government. That's in the form of, like, the big umbrella of that is cap and trade, but also, you know, the green energy retrofit rebates, which is pretty low-hanging fruit. I mean, it was very popular, but it certainly wasn't bankrupting the province, if we're going to use that kind of terminology. But it seems like this is not going to be, just from the first moves, like an environmentally friendly, in terms of the way we've thought about it the last 20 years in government, or at least maybe not an environmentally friendly premier's office.
Well, first of all, I on the broader issue, I mean, one of the things that is important to me is balancing cooperation and confrontation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I made a pledge in the campaign to do politics differently and try to work hard across party lines. So I've reached out to NDP and had conversations with members of the NDP caucus, the Liberal caucus, as well as the Conservative caucus. And, you know, so I want to work across party lines to build Ontario up, to do good things for Guelph and the province. But I'm also not going to hesitate to be confrontational when I need to be confrontational, when I see the government taking actions or making moves that I think, you know, hurts Ontario, hurts Guelph. I'm certainly going to speak out and hold the government accountable. And, you know, I think one of the things that really concerns me about the initial actions from the premier designate is that, you know, one of the things he campaigned on was job creation and putting money in people's pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Well, canceling the Green Ontario rebate programs is actually taking money out of people's
right.
pockets. Like, the most cost-effective way to help people reduce their utility bills is retrofitting buildings. And so by canceling that program without having an alternative in place is actually taking money out of people's pockets, is actually making it harder for people to save money by saving energy. And so, you know, if he wanted to cancel the Green Ontario Fund, that would be fine if there was a replacement fund to replace it.
Right.
So what I've suggested is, you know, why not replace it with the old eco-energy program that the Liberal government cut? That was a very popular, effective program. And that program actually had some auditing components to it that mm. might be more attractive to the new government,
right.
Just to ensure that the effectiveness of the way in which homeowners, you know, participated in the program. On the other hand, the Green Ontario Fund had some components to it that EcoEnergy didn't have, in the sense that it also includes small businesses and renters. So I think if we could combine the best of both of those programs into some sort of new EcoEnergy program, that would actually put money in people's pockets and help people lower their energy bills, which is something that the premier designate campaigned on.
Right.
And then on the job front, I mean, if you look at it, the biggest source of job growth in the world right now is the clean economy. And so I've been saying to people, you know, I want people to know that Ontario's open for business. Guelph is open for business. If you want to invest in clean economy jobs that, you know, will help us tackle climate change, will help us reduce pollution, will help us conserve water, will help us, you know, create clean water, will help us grow more local sustainable food. I mean, we should be encouraging those kinds of jobs and that kind of business investment. And so the fact that the premier designate has taken action to essentially say those kinds of jobs are not welcome in Ontario, I think it's bad for our economy and it's bad for job creation. And so I'm really reaching out to try to appeal to the new premier that if you're serious about job creation, then investing in the clean economy and tackling climate change is the way to go. And if you look at the four provinces in Canada right now with the best economic performances are the four provinces that have a price on pollution. Mm-hmm. So actually the provinces with the best economies right now in Canada are those with a price on carbon pollution. So why we want to get rid of it and join those provinces that are not performing as well economically makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Sorry, you wanted
to. I was going to say, I think we might have just gotten a hint of what your first...
my first press conference
private
is about?
Your first private member's bill, because there was a lot in there to unpack. You were fairly unequivocal because, of course, it came up right after the election that with the Liberals only having seven seats, there was that natural, like, well, why doesn't he just join the Liberals? And you'd also said that you're talking about just now, about aligning with any party. Do you think... Are you going to be happy or settled with your free agent status? Do you feel you'll be able to? What do you feel you'll be able to accomplish in that? I know you some of the things you just listed, but is it going to be strictly a world of private members, Bill, or are we going to see sort of allegiances between any of the parties? I guess really, free agents like baseball, right?
First of all, I want to be very clear with people and unequivocal about the fact that I'm not taking any action that would compromise my independence as a Green MPP elected by the people of Guelph. So, you know, it was suggested that, you know, why doesn't Mike join the Liberal Party and they could, you know, have official party status? People of Guelph did not vote for a Liberal. Mike Schreiner, Green MPP, and that's where I'm going to go to Queen's Park and champion Guelph and champion, you know, what I think is good for Ontario. That being said, you know, I've made it clear that, you know, I'm happy to work across party lines with Liberals, NDP, or Conservatives to move forward legislation that I think will benefit Ontario, benefit Guelph. But I won't do anything that's going to compromise my independent voice. I have suggested, alternatively, that those seven Liberal MPPs, they're welcome to join the Green Party. We'd have to vet them first just to make sure that, you know, and then we could have an official Green Party caucus. They're more than welcome to do that if they'd like.
You never know, right? You never know.
That would be a bold strategy for the Liberal Party of Ontario. but it does, you know, Scotty's question just made me think, you know, have they talked to you about in terms of how question period is going to work? Because, you know, official party status comes with it perks.
That's right.
Like being able to ask questions. I'm not sure I've heard anything about what the Liberal status is going to be, but I mean, you're a particular case being a caucus of one. So, you know, are you just going to be having to sit there and, you know, play Tetris for 4 years as other people get to ask questions, or is there going to be mic time and question period?
Yeah, so independent members are allocated time for question period and time for debate and proceedings, et cetera. So obviously, if you're an established, recognized party and have official party status, you are allotted more time during question period. But I am allotted time as an independent. I'm allotted, I'll be on at least one committee as an independent.
Good.
And I'm allotted time for members' debate as an independent. And obviously, I'm given the opportunity to introduce private members' bills as well. I've been advised by other Green leaders in other provinces who have been, you know, the first seat is to make sure you understand the standing orders inside and out so you can take advantage of every opportunity you have to intervene in the legislature. There are a number of ways in which the legislature is facilitated in a more efficient way through unanimous consent. Mm. And so you can actually, one person denying unanimous consent can't stop things, but can certainly muck up the process.
Sure.
And so there's a real incentive for the government House leader and the official opposition House leader to, you know, meet with and work with independent members of the legislature, just to ensure that the legislature runs in an efficient, effective way, and that unanimous consent is granted.
Right, because without that unanimous consent, you can grind things right to a halt, because there's like pro forma things that kind of sail through on unanimous consent, and just depends upon the members to know what's. And we see this in city council as well. There are reports and things that are in the council agenda that perhaps don't get a full, you know, airing in the council chambers, because it's just a pro forma thing, like Guelph Transit drivers getting their certification or things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to abuse that power,
right?
But I also won't hesitate to use tools like that if you know, I'm not given opportunities to participate fully in the legislative process.
Right. It's a little arrow in the quiver. I want to, you know, I realize we just went through an election, but I'm curious a bit, because this was phase one of the plan. It was to get Mike Schreiner into the legislature to prove it can be done. So from the macro party perspective, when we come to another election 4 years hence, what's the plan? What's the goal? Or, you know, even if that's just sort of the brief outlines of a plan, I'm sure it's been discussed in terms of, now that we've accomplished phase one, what does phase two look like?
Well, I mean, if you look at other Green parties in other provinces, so British Columbia went from one to three and hold a balance of what they call responsibility in a minority government. You have PEI Greens have gone from one to two and are now pulling neck and neck with the Liberals, either likely to form official opposition or even government. And in New Brunswick, you know, one MLA is now there, fairly cautiously optimistic, we'll use that term again, that they can elect two or three additional members. And I think part of what it is when people see Greens in action, proving that you can do politics differently, they want to vote for more Greens. So I think, you know, if we want that to happen in Ontario, it means that, first of all, I just need to be a very good constituency MPP, serve my constituents well, be a strong champion for Guelph, strong champion for people who live in Guelph. I think, secondly, being a very good parliamentarian, and Greens tend to be very hardworking parliamentarians who utilize, you know, all the tools in the toolbox to be effective in Parliament, and I certainly intend to do that as well. And then third, you know, obviously, you know, your work building the party, but to me, the best way to build the party is to be a great MPP for Guelph.
Well, we certainly wish you luck, and now that you're big time, we hope you don't forget your old friends at the little community radio station, and we hope to have you by many times in the next four years.
I'm happy to come by any time. I love community radio. I was on with the students at Brant Avenue the other day.
They gave you a hard time.
They did. They asked me some tough questions, eh?
Tougher than us.
Tougher than you two. Come on.
Oh, my goodness. We need to up
our
game.
You got to take some lessons for these kids,
yeah,
eh?
We may have to retire.
Yeah, probably.
Open source is the next generation. Well, cool. Well, Mike, thanks again for stopping by, and we look forward to chatting with you again.
Always a pleasure.
And it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure to have Mike in, and
so we're sitting here contemplating our probable retirements, but
I forgot that portion.
Yeah,
so much
too.
Has happened in the last 24 hours.
Let's just go.
Anyway, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back with Topics of the Toronto Persuasion. You're listening to Open Sources Guelph. You're on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Taking you back to the exact moment when CanCon went LGBTQ. 1983, believe it or not. Probably needs no introduction, but that was the Parachute Club with Rise Up.
Yes.
Which has heard every Pride for 3 days straight.
So why not hear it on the radio?
Yeah,
more
so
time.
We play it too.
So we did want to talk about Pride a little because it's funny sort of what happens or what's happened with Pride in the last few years. And in 2016, there was that very famous, I don't want to call it a confrontation because it wasn't really a confrontation. It was a straight up protest of Black Lives Matter, of Pride, and pointing out that, there was once real friction between the LGBT community and the police, and that perhaps there was just reason for people in the LGBT community to not consider the police, or at least the uniform police, as an organization, an ally. And, of course, this year, it was sort of proven right. And I think those of us who were maybe a bit cynical, and I would count myself among them, of Black Lives Matter's intentions in doing that die-in or that lie-in protest that they did. The police, perhaps not the most dependable ally the LGBT community in Toronto has, and that's been, I think, been proven very handily with Bruce MacArthur and the investigation therein.
And that is probably the number one thing that's led to the situation now. Now, I remember we talked about it at the time when Black Lives Matter had the sit-down, and I think I remember describing it as the repoliticizing Pride, because it was initially started off as a political event. We are going to get out on the streets. We're going to be recognized. Even like I said about the Parachute Club, it was significant when that was on the radio, because openly gay was not, I mean, it was still a little bit couched, and then we had Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Let's Not Talk Too Much About Music, but which I also heard today, by the way. Doesn't matter. Music, totally different channel. Anyway, so there was talk that, you know, Black Lives Matter and other groups had hijacked Pride, but I thought they kind of brought it back to where they were. Now, considering what had happened in the neighborhood, because I believe one of the last of Bruce MacArthur's alleged victims disappeared like the week before Pride, last year, two years ago, I guess it would have been. Mm. And completely botched, mishandled, in my opinion, by the sounds of it. They're saying, no, this group does not have a serial killer among them. And then all of us, oh, yes, by the way, there is a serial killer among you. So there's tension, animosity, you name it.
It wasn't just the fact that there was a serial killer among them. It was back in, I guess, March or April, where Mark Saunders, the police chief, that does this sit-down interview with the Globe and Mail editorial board, and he says, you know, maybe it wouldn't have happened if the community had been more open and we had better communication with the community. And it's like, well, it's not the victim pool's responsibility to tell the police that they feel victimized.
No, but you want to go back in time even further as to why there even is Pride.
Yeah.
What did it spring out of? It sprung out of police mistreatment of the LGBTQ community in Toronto. That is what gave birth to it, both in, say, New York City, everywhere in the world. It's like the police are beating on us. I mean, you name it. If you go back in time and check out some of the articles from the time, it's unbelievable, because they were treated as second-class citizens, you know, almost as if they weren't human, which gave rise to Pride. And I don't – you had linked – an article that was in the National Post, who was a gay freelance writer, talking about, well, I wouldn't go to Pride because of, then he listed his grievances as to why he wasn't going, which aligned with Doug Ford's in terms of, we don't want to see middle-aged pot-bellied men running down the street and it's openly sexual and all this. He had all these excuses as to why he isn't going to go. And I suppose maybe that the Doug Ford channel is a different one. He'll come up with an excuse next year. If the police are in it next year or 5 years from now, it won't be 5 years, 2 years from now, Doug Ford will come up with an excuse not to go to the parade. He does. He's uncomfortable with it. He doesn't want to seem to go. I'm not going to call him a homophobe, but there's a kernel of that there, I think, as with his brother, that strange picture of him sort of standing uncomfortably when the Pride flag is being raised. And it's unfortunate. I don't know. I think Doug and it's too late for Rob, obviously, but Doug needs some kind of ally in the gay community that can sort of ease him into, like, you know, do not be afraid of this. It's okay. Plus, you're the premier of the province.
Yeah.
And the real premier, or the current premier, or
Kathleen Wynne was there
for the next
full
12 hours. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she was, I mean, they were screaming for her at Pride. And same with the, you know, the NDP are always there. And that was one of the comments that the guy that wrote the article made was that, oh, it's pretty much an NDP Black Lives Matter project. And he's really bitter about Pride. Yeah. And I know there are a lot of people in the community that don't necessarily like it, but I think people have to realize that Pride isn't like Canada Day or Victoria Day. Pride is, it's public, but yet it's private. It's not as if, you know, there's a national obligation, let's say. We don't get the day off, you know, it's, and it has corporate sponsorship. And I know a lot of the gay community have a problem with that to some degree as well. You know, TD presents Pride or Scotiabank presents Pride. And so, you know, the groups are going to have issues. And of course, smaller groups have cleaved off, one of which was the interesting this year was the Until We Are Safe March, mm-hmm. which was at the end of the Pride March when people were dressed in black. It was a bit more somber, almost funeral-like. And I think the gates just opened and anybody that wanted to join in, joined in, which I don't think normally
No, that
happens.
Was a new thing, yeah.
So, and that was interesting, but I think there was a bit of a, it sounds like there was a bit of a communication problem. People were kind of confused as to why has everything stopped. I think maybe they thought it was another Black Lives Matter moment, but it was actually a memorial thing. They should have spread that around a bit better on the social media, but
well, I mean, it's I think that may be something that won't go away. I'll probably revisit it this year. The Doug Ford thing and his excuse, I forgot about the pot-bellied naked people thing.
Yeah,
actually,
I mean, you want to probably, right? But
there's, I mean, there's not for so everyone. Much, there's so much Doug Ford BS on a daily basis, especially now he's premier. But yeah, I read this as like. You know, when he said, well, I'm not going to be there until the cops are let back. It's like, is this like silly, you know, all cops are good. You know, this kind of like the Blue Lives Matter kind of reflex action, which you wouldn't put past Doug considering his political degree, pedigree and where he comes from. But Rob, when he was mayor, I mean, it was just like, no, I'm off to the cottage. I'm not having anything to do with off to the cottage. And I think there was some joking online, like, you know, how is Doug going to find a way to not go to Pride? Which is kind of sad in a way. And it's not like these things are foreign to conservatives. Patrick Brown went to Pride.
Which was a first, right?
Yeah.
For the conservatives anyway.
Yeah. But I mean, there are conservative politicians who go to Pride. There are gay conservatives.
Oh, tons.
So it's, it's not... it's almost not like a political movement thing like in the United States, you know. It just doesn't make Doug look good. And part of that National Post piece you were talking about was his argument that Doug Ford was going to go into a less than friendly audience, and so why would he bother, you know, dealing with people booing and hissing? And I don't think anyone's going to stop and boo and hiss, because that didn't happen to Patrick Brown either.
Well, so, he might get a little bit of that, but I mean, that goes with the territory. I mean, John Tory goes every year. John Tory was the point person on the news as far as politicians. He was on all the feeds, and he's pretty much Ned Flanders, man. Like,
oh,
you know, geez, like,
yeah.
No, he is really.
Yeah, he is
realistically,
a mustache
he's like
away from
the
Ned
straight dude.
Yeah,
is John Tory, but he goes as the mayor of Toronto. He's there for sure. But yeah, and Doug Ford did this weird take on, oh, I support the LGBTQ community. And when I talk to them, you know what they say? They want lower gas prices. And I'm thinking, yeah, that's the first thing they say to you when you talk about the issues.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
Right? And he listed all his talking points that have worked them into, yeah, the gays want that too. It's like, this is ridiculous, Ford. You probably, like, just go to the cottage or your daughter's whatever was going on. I just saw a couple of pictures on Twitter as to what, because he follows us, right? So he knows what's going
somehow
on.
Somehow.
He doesn't follow the audio stream, obviously. We would be cut off. So,
yeah,
I
don't think he listens
You're
to the show.
Off. Although I put the feelers out, but, trying to get the premiere on.
Well, there you go.
Community radio people want lower gas prices. Anyway. We
sure
all walk
do.
Here, man.
They sure do. the timing of this too was that they announced this week that there's going to be a independent review of the MacArthur case and how, you know, things were allowed to proceed for basically a decade that this guy was killing people without allegedly, any real kind of allegedly killing people without any like kind of real police action, although there was police action, but it seemed to go under the radar regardless. Going to spend $3 million. I mean, a lot of the victims' families were looking for a full-blown public inquiry. But this seemed to be the compromise, an independent review that's still going to be somewhat public, but it's not going to involve the police investigating themselves. So,
and there's also a very strong possibility that a lot of the unsolved cases in the village are somehow connected to MacArthur.
Mm-hmm.
It's upwards of 20, I believe, that mm-hmm. have a link to the gay community.
And he's only been charged with 8 so far.
He's only been charged with 8, and that may go back 40 years, I think, the list.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the media organizations did their own sort of digging and turned it over to the police. So here we have the media and the community itself doing the police's job by the sounds of it, because if everyone there is noticing a pattern, and not just the gay community as well, but minorities for the most part,
mm-hmm.
I believe one of the victims was a homeless person. Like, it's just, oh man, they should have a full inquiry, but,
mm-hmm.
I don't think it'll happen. Maybe who has to call it? It has to go through the government of
the
day,
right? My guess
would
be the province.
Yeah, so it's not going to happen. Because the person that would be behind calling it can't even make it down to Toronto during Pride, so...
Yeah, even though he's a Torontonian.
He might win some friends among that community.
His office is one block over. Yeah, it's... Yeah. I mean, that's the aspect of Doug Ford's premierness. I don't look forward to is that, I don't want to say open bigotry, but certainly that, because I don't think he's, like you said, I don't think he's a bigot, but I think that the nature of gayness and queerness is something he doesn't get. His head is so wrapped around the machismo alpha male aesthetic that, you know, the way he walks around without a tie most of the time,
yeah.
You know, it's...
I think he's scared one of his friends will call him a fag at the barbecue if he goes to it, really.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, right? It's that, because I mean, I'm this nearly the same age as Doug Ford and Rob Ford, and I remember the 80s in high school, and that was an epithet thrown around, no one thinking, but, you know, there's a subtext to that.
Oh, well, when I was in high school, somebody wrote gay on one of the chairs in one of the classrooms, and no one would sit on that chair. Because they didn't want to sit on the quote unquote.
Yeah, and isn't that
gay chair.
And you know, we look back now and say, isn't that ridiculous, right?
That's,
but it's completely ridiculous.
Yeah.
So, so what is school like now? I have no idea.
Think about that on your summer vacation.
Like
kids.
That.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully every school has a gay straight alliance, but anyway, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
Right.
And hopefully they're not narking to the parents about it either. Jason Kenny. Anyway, speaking of Toronto, and this may be one of the reasons why the police are so busy, is there have been a precipitous increase in the number of shootings and the number of fatalities and injuries resulting from shootings. And as Pride was being celebrated last weekend, 4 more were added, including like 3 that were basically within an hour of each other in different parts of Toronto. Including this one drive-by where a woman was killed in this house where 2 men were killed. And then on Monday, or early on Monday or late Sunday, somebody else was found shot and killed in a Toronto housing project. The total reported shootings for this year is up to 199 as of last weekend. So they're breaking the 200 barrier, which is unprecedented, even though it's been rather high in the last couple of years. So you had 170 last year, which was down a little from 182 in 2016. But in 2014, it was 87 at this point.
Mm.
So
and should mention that those weren't all fatals. Those are
shootings.
But,
yeah.
I think it was, I think it was 48 fatal of that group.
Yeah.
It's up 38% over last year. There's an increase.
Yeah.
And of course, the question is why. Now there's a couple of things that have been mentioned. The street gang subculture, which seems to be the new go-to phrase.
Yeah.
Which
sounds a little weird.
Yeah. And sort of an influx of guns. But something that's, I think, missed in this sometimes is that I think it's like 50% of handguns that can be traced or diverted from their legal owners, which is a nice way of saying that they were stolen,
yeah,
that they weren't stored correctly or something. But and we've talked about this a lot of times over the years, and I think both of us are of the mind, it's like, what do you need a handgun for in Toronto, right? You don't. Or any major city, for that matter. There was two gun-related busts. There was a 71-year-old collector hauled in. He had 60 rifles and shotguns. This was in St. Catharines. It wasn't Toronto. He just loved guns, had stacks and stacks of guns charged. But as we know, it's not normally long guns. And, you know, he wasn't supposed to have 60. It's not long guns that are involved with this. However, there was another raid. There's something like 1,000 charges were laid. 75 people and 75 handguns. It would seem 60 of them came from a gun runner. And this is one of the key problems as well. Guns getting into Canada via the other channels, probably usually just a regular border. It could be anywhere. So the problem is there'll be a big bust, but then the guns will appear from somewhere. I don't know if you saw the picture of them. They actually looked like they were 3D printed. They were these colorful. They looked like toy guns.
Mm-hmm.
You look at them, you say, oh, I don't know. That doesn't really look like it could be fatal or anything, but I don't know if that's a trend or something among the subculture. But, yeah. And I actually, when you think about it, it'd be quite scary if I'm sure it's been done. You print a 3D gun. It's like, we're probably finished in the GTA if that happens. But so.
Well, it's, you know, it would be, I mean, you couldn't, it's not like the point isn't to disguise them either, because there have certainly been lots of cases of people being shot, you know, because the police see them holding a cell phone and it's, they think it's a quote unquote gun. So, you know, it's, and certainly, in toy guns too, there was the one kid, I can't remember where, who was shot by the police who had the toy
gun. I want to say Cleveland, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think it was Cleveland.
He was goofing around the park or something.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it's like, it should be worth pointing out, it's not just a Toronto thing, because there was the arrest made yesterday or today. The person who shot up Pickering Rib Fest and injured four people.
When was that?
Was earlier this month.
Oh, I completely missed that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, four people were injured in a shooting at the Pickering Rib Fest. And it's hard, I mean, just going by, you know, Rib Fest here in Guelph, like, the worst that happens is, like, a bunch of people, like, start hitting each other at 2 a.m. after going to the ranch. Because I've seen it with my own eyes, by the, thanks to my hotel experience.
Sad but true.
So you don't normally associate, you know, a drive-by with Rib Fest.
You ate my ribs, bang. Yeah.
But, so it's something that's kind of spreading, too. It's not just a Toronto thing. And then even here in Guelph, there was a bust couple of weeks ago where
the bicycles, meth, guns, and meth.
Guns and meth, yeah.
The holy trinity of the stuff that we read in Guelph today. Yeah, and this, I mean, part of it too is that guns are a business. You can get a so-called clean gun from the States, but the markup on it, you can get a gun for like $500 and that's worth about $4,000 in Toronto. And I think for a lot of people that, you know, making that kind of money, temptation is too great. And something that, getting back to Doug Ford as well, because I think he's a common thread in both of these stories, had mentioned that he wants to bring back TAVIS, which was the Toronto Anti-Violence Intervention, what's the S, service, I guess?
Oh, I have that written down somewhere. Yes, strategy.
Strategy.
Toronto Anti-Violence Intervention Strategy.
But I think the reason that they got rid of that was that their thing was that, yeah, they were carding everybody, black, brown, or if you're just kind of sketchy looking, right? That is just like,
well, usually the black and brown people are sketchy looking.
No, but that was the problem with it, is that the police like, oh, I don't know about that guy, we're gonna card him, and it is usually a him. So this is another thing that's on Ford's burner, the law and order agenda, that's gonna have these secondary effects beyond, you know, does it stop guns? I think it's probably the deep police work, like I was, the busts I had mentioned earlier, that will get more guns off the street than just sort of grabbing Joe Schmoes walking along.
Well, even Mark Saunders said that resurrecting TAVIS wasn't going to do any good, because it just meant, you know, more police discrimination of people who are black and brown, and youth, of course, as well. So if you meet any of those three criteria, you're going to be stopped and carded. And I think there's been widespread agreement that, you know, just profiling people and saying, show me your ID, that's not how you get gun violence down. It certainly then hasn't been the case. If the numbers haven't changed, and yeah, the numbers are spiking, the numbers have gone way up, but there hasn't been a huge degree of change. if, you know, the numbers went down last year after the carding was completed, and if the numbers were down way low before Tavis was installed too, that, like, Tavis had no effect on it at all. So, you know, what are you even doing? And Mark Saunders then said that he thinks there should be stronger sentences. And it's like, well, if you're one of the quote-unquote gang subculture people, you know, how much are you scared of a little more time in prison?
If it's a badge of honor, isn't it, really?
If you're, sure.
I went down for this or that.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you're not scared of being shot and killed, you know, you're not going to be scared of a little more prison time. And what's particularly concerning is that there doesn't seem to be any, at least the four last weekend, there's been, the media did look into, like, why were these people targeted? And it seems to be, like, they have no idea. They're, like, these people have no gang affiliation in their background, no criminal affiliations, like, in their background. It just seemed to be wrong place, wrong time. But, like, three of these people were killed within such a short span of each other.
Well, the woman that was in the back of the car, Jenna Snyarko.
Yeah.
It's like they can't really say that there's any kind of link as to why she was killed.
And she was in a car with four people and just fired the one shot.
And it seems random, but yet, you know, they haven't established the fact as to what's going on. And of course, we probably won't hear about it. It comes and it goes. You see the face, and then it's like it's just another statistic. So therein lies the problems. And until they can get to the, you know, the root causes of what's driving it, and they can take all the guns off the street. I should have mentioned that in that large bust of handguns, they also hauled in about $1 million worth of drugs, coke, opioids, heroin, and, well, cannabis isn't going to matter in 6 months probably. But so begs the question, you know, are these things something that should be made, if not illegal, at least decriminalized? And then, again, that's probably a story for another day. But yeah, in doing the homework for this show, as we do, I visited the Integrated Gun and Gang Task Force looking for more information because they are the go-to people now. Their webpage is pure GeoCities. It was like a John Tremel grade page. It's like, you want me to, like, find out info on this? And it's like some text and, oh yeah, you got anything you can call us. I think it was written in about 1999 and just kind of left up there, so I believe the task forces and law enforcement and other groups need to up their game in terms of, you know, getting the info out there. Maybe there isn't that much info to be had. It's like, yeah, there's this problem, and if you've got anything, send us a tip. Write a postcard to P.O. Box 19, Toronto,
Call
Ontario.
Call Crime Stoppers at 222 tips. It's the question is, you know, what can be done? Because as we were talking about, they're now doing the independent review of the Bruce MacArthur thing. They're also doing a review of following the van attack in April, which also helps skews the homicide numbers for this year, because that 47, 48 is that 10 of them are that one attack. So it's, you know, there's a lot on the police plate. So, you know, going back to Tavis and sort of adding these additional sort of extreme measures is you know, adding to the situation that the police have more to handle. And we don't know for sure, like, is there a social solution? Because we really don't know what's going on. Like, again, why were these people targeted? Why is, you know, people shooting up at Ridfests and other things? And
I mean, there's definitely a social solution, because we've seen over the years with, you know, what is the political solution here? It's, you know, red meat for the Doug Ford gang, and yet you know, if you're critical of police or beat on them, then it's like, oh, you're just a radical.
Well, it's
whatever.
Red meat, but their solution is, like, give the police more powers, and even the police are saying, no, we don't need more powers. So if that's not the solution, I think that's always the go-to solution. Then what is the solution? How do we rectify this? And nobody seems to know. And it's hard to know that, because when the victims appear to be random, although it's hard to say that they are truly random, because, you know, most murders are most murder victims are familiar to their murderer. So
that's a great question. We'll keep this on the burner too, and hopefully track somebody down to get in and talk about it, I think.
Sure.
Like to pursue that further.
Yeah. It's kind of a bummer to leave it on.
Leave it at that, yeah. But,
so we are going to leave it there. You can stay connected to us on our website, opensourcesguelph.com, Opensources Newswire on Facebook, at @OS_Guelph on Twitter. And you can re-listen to this episode or listen to other episodes of Open Sources Guelph on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean or subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. I almost called it iTunes. Like, that's a thing.
I'm patent it now.
I should.
We'll make our million.
I should have patented it now.
We can buy this station.
We can buy this community radio station. You can connect with me on Twitter at Adam A. Donaldson or go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scott Hertz on Twitter, and I occasionally blog at spanderbook.wordpress.com.
And if we don't see you around, and sometimes we do see you around, happy Canada Day weekend. And a rebroadcast of DJ Sounds Good to Me is going to be on at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFR.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. We'll be back here for Independence Day. We're going to blow up the White House. I don't know. That's next Thursday at 5 p.m., and we'll see you then.